Hello, this is Abby.
Dear Abby, this is gonna be a long one.
Oh boy.
Dear Abby, how do you tell the difference between a new exciting crush and a rebound?
Does it matter?
Dear Abby.
Dear Abby.
Dear Abby.
Welcome to our little corner of the internet. This is the Dear Abby podcast. I hope you stay and hang out with us. See you in a sec. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dear Abby. I'm your host. My name is Abby. Welcome back to another episode of your favorite cozy podcast. I've been thinking a lot about brain rot and scrolling and doom scrolling. I think a little bit of brain rot is just fun when you need to decompress or when you've actually been using your brain a lot in healthy ways and then you just need to rot a little bit. That's always fine. I think it's when we don't spend any time alone or with our thoughts or with our faith or with our, you know, values, and we just scroll because it's comfortable and we get that dopamine hit, or we just feel like that's just what we have to do because it's an easy way to feel okay and to feel better. Because sometimes doom scrolling does kind of make you feel better in the moment. But it makes me personally feel worse overall because then I didn't take the time to like do the things that I actually really want to do and that mean a lot to me. But I have been pretty good, honestly, at not doom scrolling, not to toot my own horn, but toot toot. Almost every other day, there's a point where I'm using the restroom or I'm doing something and I'm supposed to check something on my phone, or like I wanted to post something really fast and then 10 minutes later I'm like scrolling and I'm like, how did this happen? It's so weird. So that stuff is so common, and I've just been thinking a lot about how much that affects just your growth as a person, and it genuinely makes me feel sick sometimes, like, to think of how much time I've wasted on looking at other people's lives. And it's not in a way of getting inspired, it's just by, there's like no point really to it, and it's very vain is the word. It's just a weird thing that our generation and our age has to learn for themselves, is not to do that and not to doom scroll. And if you catch yourself always needing to be entertained, that there is probably something annoyingly deeper going on. And sometimes it's hard to admit that, or we don't want to admit that because it would require a lot more conscious changing, and that can be extremely uncomfortable. So we don't want to do that all the time. But it's just a plague, you know, where we like to distract and entertain and distract, and it feels like fun until it's not, and then you feel horrible and worse. So the reason I was thinking about that is because I noticed, and I was talking to my sister last week on the podcast. If you haven't listened to it, my sister from, her name is Chelsea. She's on What We Said, the co-host. I'm sure everyone probably knows who she is. And she was on and she was talking about when she deleted TikTok, she felt her anxiety go down tremendously. And there are just healthy ways to process information in unhealthy ways. And I really believe that scrolling is one of the most unhealthy ways to process information because there's no human connection. You're reading something, you're holding on to an electrical device, you're not in the presence of somebody. And by the way, it can be very good. I'm not someone that believes all scrolling media is bad and evil and bad. But I do think that it's just the other side of the coin, where there's a lot of good that comes from having social media. People can meet people through there and then connect in person, and people can find their community, and there's a lot of beautiful things, and there's a lot of awareness that comes from it. But I always think about this with my OCD. Whenever I scroll and I see all this information and this, and I'm looking at all of these OCD things, or I don't really actually do this as much anymore, looking at like OCD tips and looking at hundreds a day. That used to be almost like a compulsive thing, as I wanted to relate to everybody that had OCD. And so that's like all I would spend my time doing, and it felt good, and then it didn't. So it's something that is very closely connected to our mental health. And when I would intake more information, my brain would use that. And it would use that to morph my symptoms a little bit differently and to trick me and make me feel like it really is real this time. So that was something that was not helpful. And also, back to what I was saying with processing information, Chelsea was talking about how when you process a lot of information at once with scrolling, it goes from one thing to the next, 20 seconds, 20 seconds, 20 seconds, 10 seconds, 5 seconds, you read a caption, you read another caption. Your brain is so, it wants to understand things. It wants to process things. And it wants to know where to put things. It wants to know, okay, do we actually need to be worried about this? Do we not? Is this real? Is this not real? Or is it, does this apply to us? Does this not apply to us? Do I need to be doing that for my health? Do I need to be doing this? When you're processing in 5 seconds, I don't think that's how your brain works. And I am not a therapist or anything, so this is all speculation of how the brain works. This is just my own experience, but I've never been able to successfully process something when I'm scrolling. And afterwards, I feel depleted of all energy, of all care, all of, like, my heart feels heavy, but not, it's like in a depressive way versus like I feel sad or I feel something. I just feel heavy. It's like it's kind of sucked the life out of me. That's not okay. And I think sometimes we get used to it because so many people do it and it's just part of sometimes people's daily routine and they don't even realize how bad it's making them feel. And this isn't just doom scrolling. It can be any vice or anything, but I'm specifically talking about doom scrolling. It's just when we start to turn to that vice and we do it and we're so used to doing it, it just is sad because it's just hurting us more and more and more. And we're desperately trying to feel better, but we're turning to the wrong things to feel better. And so it's just even more exhausting and more discouraging. So the longer we keep turning to those vices, those unhealthy ways of coping with feelings, of trying to process, of understanding, or maybe you just want a distraction because life is hard. It's like those things trick us to make us think they're going to make us feel better. And they might immediately, or they might just take our mind off of it for a little while, but it's going to come back. And we need to like be able to handle that and know what to do when that comes back. And we need to face the real life things going on. And that's a lot easier said than done, but that's an important thing for us to pay attention to and to take it seriously. Like if something is really damaging you, you don't deserve that. That's not fair. Like don't keep doing that to yourself. You got to stand up for yourself against yourself sometimes. And you got to stand up for yourself against the things that are just thrown onto you in this world and in this life. Like you don't have to do all of these things that everyone else is doing, or you don't have to scroll. You don't have to be involved with all of these things that your heart is maybe calling you not to be involved in, or you don't feel like it's adding anything to your life. Anyways, I'm feeling very passionate about that because it's just my life is immensely better when I don't do that. And when I am like, actually, I do want a better life for myself. And I want to see if there's deeper things that I can understand and feel. And a way to do that is not by distracting myself and not by ignoring how I feel. And if I feel like, anyways, I could keep going and going and going. I was like, this is going to be a really lighthearted episode. I'm just going to, whatever. But, and it still will be. I'm not like, hopefully it doesn't sound like I'm cracking down. I just kind of hopped in. And I always feel weird when I do that. But I just think that there's a lot of joy that we miss and a lot of life that we miss when we give in to those vices. And so sometimes I need a reminder to not do that and to not give in, and I don't have to. And that I'm in charge of my destiny. Like I am in charge of what I do. I am in charge of my life. And I think with OCD sometimes, especially because we feel like we have to follow OCD's command, something that I said for a long time and I have to start saying again to myself is like, I don't answer to OCD. I don't answer to OCD. OCD is not like my master, you know, as someone who's very religious and has faith in God, I have to remind myself that A, God is bigger than my OCD, and B, I answer to God. I don't answer to my OCD. And thank goodness, because OCD is relentless and God is merciful and he loves me and he knows me. And so that's like the least scariest person to answer to, even though my OCD will tell me he's the scariest person to answer to, but I don't actually really believe that. I think sometimes I find myself, playing dumb or dumbing down or numbing down my feelings and my emotions in front of other people because I don't want to overwhelm them with my feelings or how deeply and passionate I am about certain things, especially with my faith. But every time that I do that, a little piece of me feels like it's dying. And a little piece of my softness feels like it's leaving. And so I've been trying to not do that, I guess. I just kind of tell myself that if someone really wants to understand, they will try. But it's kind of hard to tell myself that because I always feel like, well, I shouldn't talk about anything that I think then because what if I'm wrong about everything? But that's not fair. And I'm not going to do that to myself because that's hurting my own feelings. And I have to respectfully choose to live my own life and respect my feelings first. And that'll help me respect other people's feelings because I'll feel stronger in my own. And so I'm more capable and I'm more willing to listen to other people too. Not that I'm going to agree with them or that I'm going to think the same or believe the same, but I'll be a lot more willing to understand and listen because I'll be confident in my own feelings versus when I just dumb it down and I act like I don't know anything. I think just my passion for mental health and having something to believe in is something I have to play dumb about sometimes or act like I don't care as much as I really deep down do. And we shouldn't do that, you guys. We should just own it, you know? I should just own it. I try to, but it's hard sometimes when you're like, what if someone misunderstands and what if someone thinks I'm this way? It's like, then they think you're that way. That's it. That's the consequences of that. Okay, so that was a fun intro to the episode. I didn't do dubs and L's yet, but I will do that really fast and then we'll get into the meat of today's episode and then we'll do a Dear Abby. And the meat of today's episode, we're talking about the things that OCD will use against you. This episode is a specific to OCD type episode because I feel like some are kind of about OCD, some of them are just about mental health in general, but this one's pretty specific to OCD. But maybe it'll apply to other things in your life if you don't have OCD or something, because I think most principles kind of go into multiple things, but we're talking about the things OCD uses against you, which I think is an important reminder to get every once in a while. So I'm excited to talk about that. But first, dubs and L's. Dub. We finally did the watch party for my Lord of the Rings. I invited my sister and her husband, but they have two kids, and it's a 4.5 hour long movie for Lord of the Rings extended version, Return of the King. And so they said no, respectfully, which I understand. So I wanted this to be a surprise for my husband, so I made a little Evite and was like, you're invited to the Lord of the Rings watch party. And it was a cute little Evite with, like, you know, Aragorn and Eowyn and just cute vibes. So it was all kind of like a surprise as what we were doing. And I was like, I'll have dinner ready and everything, so just show up and then, you know, it'll just be like a little date. So just I'm putting on a date basically for us, because the other day he did say I don't really do a lot of dates. I think he might have said that on the podcast actually when he was on. So I was like, oh, I feel kind of bad. I do need to do that. I had 3 hours from the second I got done with work. I had 3 hours to get so many things done, and I definitely overcommitted. I wanted to do like my whole apartment was going to get redone into like Rivendell or an elvish forest vibe, but we did not have time. We had 3 hours. And those 3 hours, I had to pick up stuff from the storage unit, but Keaton had the key, so I had to drive to where Keaton was because he wasn't at work. He was at an event. So I had to go drive to the event, pick up the key, go get the stuff from the storage, which was like candles, just like decor stuff, like pretty stuff from our wedding. And so I got all that stuff. I came home, dropped that off, went and got groceries to make dinner, and I got snacks, like Lord of the Rings themed. Like, I got peach rings for rings. I sell those on Pinterest. Everything else I tried to not steal from Pinterest. I didn't make the cake. I bought a cake already, and then I just frosted it, and then I did a design, like an elvish forest overgrowth vine rose cake. Got the Eye of Sauron cupcakes, which were just ding-dong cupcakes. I didn't have time to make it look like an eye. They're just like the Black Gate or the Eye of Sauron, you know, dark vibes. Oh, I got mozzarella sticks that were wrapped in prosciutto, and those were Frodo's fingers because Gollum bites his finger off. And I just got a bunch of like stuff like that. And then I made actually a really good dinner. I made potatoes, boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew. Even you couldn't say no to that. Oh, yes, we could. It's a quote from the movie. So I got potatoes, carrots from the farm. You guys don't care about this. You don't care about this. What am I doing? You don't care. But I'm going to keep going, actually. Carrots from the farm. When Pippin and Mary stole the carrots. And they ran out of the farm at the very beginning of the first movie. And then I made mushrooms because that's the only thing that they like have the best weed there, apparently. And so in the book, someone in the Shire or within the Hobbit area makes the best weed. And so I thought shrooms, you know. Is this going to get flagged if I say that? I'm not doing them. This was a representation for the movie. Don't do that stuff. So I just cooked that. Carrots, potatoes. We didn't get any meat except for the prosciutto and mozzarella because we were meated out. We had eaten so much meat the past week. And then I got some moss, laid it around, made it look all nice. And then when he came home, I was breaking a sweat. I had just barely showered because I just wanted to shower before because I felt disgusting. And so when he got home, the projector wasn't set up. I didn't finish everything on time, and I was so mad because I'd worked so hard. But also, I couldn't figure out how to open up the projector and get it started because it was like a screen that you had to flip, and it was like a whole big thing. So I was like, I need a man. I need a man for this. And it was a fun night. Then we watched the whole thing in one night. Keaton fell asleep about 2 hours in. I stayed up the whole 4.5 hours, and I was locked in. And then I could not go to sleep that night. I don't know what it was. I just was so anxious, and that kind of sucked. That was a bad night. That was a bad OCD feeling night where I just like can't sleep, and I have racing thoughts, and I feel like my brain is like being hijacked. It's so annoying. And then I woke up and I was like, what was that? You know? So that was my dub. The L was definitely that night I couldn't sleep, and I just felt like anxious, like not necessarily OCD anxious, just like anxious, a little bit detached, or felt a little bit depersonalized, honestly, which hasn't been very fun. But yeah, that was my week. Okay, let's get into the meat of today's episode, and then we'll do a Dear Abby. I wanted to talk about something important, which is everything that OCD will use against you, because OCD is smart, okay? It's like kind of really dumb, but it's also pretty smart because it uses your wit. It uses your knowledge. It pulls from your own knowledge to use it against you, which is frustrating. So that's the first thing, is it uses your knowledge against you. And again, I am not a therapist, so do not take this as like word. This is just from my experience, what I have grown to know, what I've heard people talk about, like therapists, what I've heard from my own therapist, stuff like that. And I just want to share it. I'm just regurgitating, but it'll use your knowledge against you. So for example, and that's why they say sometimes researching the crap out of your OCD stuff is sometimes worse. Well, if you are doing it compulsively, it's always worse. But if you keep researching and researching and researching, your brain then has that knowledge of, okay, then maybe you have an OCD fear of your sexual orientation. So you start searching, okay, if I was a lesbian, what would I feel towards women? If I was, you just start researching stuff to see, are you not? Is this real? Is this not real? Is this OCD? I'm pretty sure it is, but what if it's not? Then I have to figure it out. You go in this whole rabbit hole of searching, and then you get all of this information, which is like, sometimes it can be helpful of like, oh, phew, okay, I don't really feel that. I don't think I feel that. So that's fine. And then your OCD bounces back again. And it's like, are you sure you don't feel that? I I think you felt that the other day, but sometimes it waits until later on, and then it uses that knowledge, that research. Then next time you see a woman, maybe it remembers some of those symptoms. Maybe it remembers some of those things that it said on those articles or those whatever videos. And then it might create fake sensations of those things. Or it might make you question it in that moment, saying, are you feeling these things? And in that moment, you have to be like, I don't know. And I'm not going to check. I am not going to check my symptoms. And so that is one thing that when you do research a lot and when you get education around OCD, sometimes it can, if it's really sticky, it'll try to use that understanding and that knowledge against you. So it might change up your symptoms, which is something that I've experienced so often where I think my OCD is one thing. And then it morphs and it changes and it shows up differently and it feels different in my body and it feels different in my mind. But it's the same thing. It's not the same content. It's not the same feelings. But I know it's the same thing. It's the same discomfort or the same kind of distress of uncertainty. So that's just important to remember that A, OCD can change and morph, and B, OCD will use your knowledge and your understanding of things against you, which is so mean and it's so frustrating sometimes, but that is just what it does. And so if you are a very smart person too, then it will use all of the smartness against you, which that's why it makes you feel a little bit crazy. So it's a helpful reminder to everyone that has OCD that the OCD will use that against you. Something else OCD will definitely use against you is your want to be a good person or to do good. And to kind of not necessarily please other people, but you just want to do what's good and right. And it's sometimes just as simple as that. But OCD can use that want and that little desire of yours and it will make it so you need to know for sure that you are good and that you're doing everything good and right, totally 100%. And it feels like it is. And if not, and you can't get that certainty, then it's like, it's not fun. Then it's horrible and it's debilitating and depressing. So it definitely uses that desire to do good against you. It just is relentless. Sometimes I hear and sometimes I think, and it's helpful for me to think that it's like trying to help me in some horribly wrong, backwards way, but it's still kind of trying to help. It's just like really bad at it. But then other times I think it does not care at all about me. It cares about its stupid little comfort zone and it cares about just, it's like a menace. It's just, it doesn't care about me. It doesn't care about my heart. It doesn't care about my soul. It just is like sucking me dry. So it doesn't care about me. Anyways, I go back and forth. I don't know. It's whatever is more helpful for anyone to like think about is just how you should think about it. I don't know. And then, of course, another thing OCD will use against us is your care. And I had a whole episode about this, if you're interested, a couple episodes ago about sensitivity and OCD. But your care for things and your want for a good life, for other people to have a good life, for you to be connected to other people, to bond, to love, to be loved, it'll use all of that stuff and it can distort it and it can make you feel like it's never enough. It can use that desire that we have to be loved, even especially sometimes the desire to be loved. It's really hard for me to let myself be loved and to really believe that other people love me. It's so weird because I'm like, logically, I think I'm pretty cool. Like, I think I'm pretty okay. You know, I have confidence, but then there's a really vulnerable, scared part that really doesn't fully believe that people really love me. And I think a lot more people think that than not. Maybe I could totally be wrong about that. And sometimes that part of my brain makes me feel like it's bad to want to be loved. I shouldn't care to be loved. I should only love. And I don't really believe that. Like, I really believe that we were made to receive love as much as to give love. And that's as equally as joyful. And it's an important thing to prioritize, is to receive other people's love. Because when you try to give love and someone doesn't receive it, it's incredibly hurtful, A. And B, when you receive love, you receive love, as simple as that. sometimes there's no lesson behind it, or there's no purpose of why. It's just like, we just need to receive love. We just need love sometimes. Like, it doesn't need to be complicated, and there doesn't need to be a point past it. It's just, that's sometimes what we need. And so with having OCD or any mental illness, it just kind of creates a barrier of receiving that love and really believing in it. I just have to watch out every once in a while to see if I'm not receiving or letting myself receive any type of a love. And also if OCD is using that desire against me. Right off the bat, those are the main three things that I thought of, because they're the most obvious ones to me. And I'm sure there's so much more that it can and does use against us. Okay, let's do a Dear Abby, and then we will wrap up today's episode of the podcast. Okay, so I got a direct message on Instagram. And if you guys ever want to write in to have a Dear Abby submission, it's the part where you guys ask whatever question you want. Most of the time, you guys send in mental health questions. And I share my experience because, again, I'm not a therapist, but I just will answer the question, and it's every episode, unless sometimes we run out of time and I have guests on, but we answer it every episode. So if you wanted to get on, so if you wanted to submit, you can also just DM instead of texting or calling the number. I never knew OCD could be purely in my head. I struggle with SOCD and ROCD. They are bestie bullies that beat me up, LOL, but not anymore. I've been able to make things feel a lot more manageable. Yes, I still struggle, which is why I'm writing in. Recently, OCD has been flaring up for me. I'm engaged first, before I move on, and before I forget to say this, it's a big deal to make your OCD more manageable. That is a lot of hard work, so don't ever like second guess your hard work or anything like that. That is a lot of courage and strength that it takes to get to where it's more manageable. So just putting that out there. Okay, let's move on. I'm engaged to my fiance and we are getting married soon. I notice when we do things like plan the wedding, create the registry, book the photographer, I get triggered. And it's like, are you sure? This is big. How do you not let OCD ruin your wedding season or ruin your wedding day? The root of my OCD seems to come from a fear of not truly knowing myself fully. How do I know myself? I feel like OCD has stripped me away and I've been trying to rebuild. What if I don't want to rebuild with my fiance and things change? Everything says trust your gut, but I feel like OCD took that luxury. I don't trust my gut feelings anymore. Okay, first things that popped to my head. I'm leaning back like this. My neck is starting to hurt. I sit all day at work. So when I do the podcast, I'm sitting again for a couple of hours and I'm like, I go crazy sometimes. And my back is killing me. So sorry. I am engaged. I'm just chilling now. I'm just relaxing. Okay. I am tempted to go through all of your what ifs and calm your fears, but I'm not going to necessarily do that. Instead, I'm curious if you are in therapy, and if you are, what are the responses that you guys are working on to give those what ifs and those fears that pop up when you're doing these wedding planning things, because that's important. When you have ROCD and you're getting married, I mean, like, that is one of the biggest triggers, is getting married when you have ROCD. At least for me, it was. It totally could be different for somebody else, but I mean, you're committing to somebody for life. That is what you're doing. And so it is okay to really take a second and understand and let yourself sit with that fear that comes up with you are committing to somebody for life. You don't know everything about yourself. You don't know what the future holds. You don't know what's going to happen. And you can handle that. And you will handle the things as they come up, as you have in the past. And you will be able to figure it out when you need to. And by figure it out, I mean whatever the problem that arises is. Maybe you, in 15 years, you realize, actually, you know what? Maybe you're both involved in the same hobby and this is a really big part of your relationship or something. And you change in 15 years and you're like, I actually don't like this at all anymore and I don't want to do this. A fear might pop up saying, what if that is going to break up your relationship? And what if that means you're not going to spend time with each other? And what if that's a foundation of your relationship? So blah, blah, blah. You can't guarantee that's not going to happen. And you can't guarantee that that's going to happen. There really is no trick. There's no trick to like knowing the future. You just don't know. That's uncomfortable. From somebody who's gotten divorced and then remarried, it's still uncertain. I could get another divorce. I really don't want to. I really never want to ever experience that again. And I would be absolutely devastated. And I don't think I would ever try to love again. It was a very freeing thing to accept the fact that I didn't know the future and I didn't know what it held for me. But what I can control and what I can do and what is within my power is to be the kind of, right now for you, fiance that you want to be, and focus on that. With my therapist, we'd work on like re-engaging with whatever I'm doing, not trying to necessarily ignore or suppress anything, but just like as things are coming up, just be like, okay, OCD, you can come with me, like we're gonna go do this, or we're gonna like try to keep painting, whatever, and you can do your thing and scream at me in the background. But a helpful thing to re-engage after enduring maybe some episodes or when something is really bothering you is to focus on your values. It can be helpful to write down what is OCD doing to your relationship that is not helpful and that is definitely not going to help have a successful marriage. Sometimes the best thing to do is to write down those, what torture OCD is putting you through and what are the negative effects it's having on you and your relationships, and then use that as fuel to also respond in a good way to when OCD comes up. But also you can use that in ways to identify your value, saying, okay, when OCD is saying, what if you're not that attracted to them? And so you don't want to hug them, or you don't want to kiss them, or you don't want to show affection. That is not going to be well received on the other end, because that's hurtful. It's just hurtful. You're either going to feel rejected. There's a lot of consequences, and it's not something that you should use to shame yourself or to make yourself feel bad, because it is a debilitating thing to have OCD. And we can use that as fuel to help get to a better place. That's something I would do, is doing the listing out things and really take a moment to understand and slow down and focus on those values that you want in your marriage, your relationship. And also, like for my wedding, I chose 3 words that I wanted to feel and cultivate for that day. You can do the same thing, which was actually helpful for my OCD, because I chose these 3 words and I was like, hey, I'm living by these 3 things that day. And if OCD comes up, fine. Like if an OCD thought comes that makes me feel anxious, so what? It can be there. Like, come on, give me all you got. It's a wedding day. Come on, give me something big, was kind of my attitude. I didn't want to be scared of if a thought popped up. I didn't want to be scared of if an image popped up or something. I wanted to be able to accept that maybe my wedding day wasn't going to be perfect. Maybe I was going to have some OCD stuff come up, but also maybe I wasn't. And so either way, the unconditional acceptance was very helpful. Yeah, I'd say if you're not in therapy, then, you know, the writing down will be really helpful, just so you can do your own therapy and your own kind of homework. And understanding your fears, it sounds like you got a good understanding about that at least. Just recognize if you're trying to solve this one mystery, if they are the right person for you. But it has to be right here, right now, immediately. And it's not about love, it's about fear and control. And anything that's driven by that fear, don't try to solve it immediately. Just be like, okay, if this is still a huge thing in 1 week, then I will think about it and I will ponder about this. But unless it comes back up, I'm going to just treat it as OCD and not react the way that OCD wants me to. And then we'll see if that pops up later. Hopefully any of that was helpful. You can still have such a beautiful, dreamy wedding day with OCD in the back of your head. Will it be a little bit annoying? Yes. But also maybe what's not helpful is having a immense pressure that you might have on yourself to have it be a perfect day, because sometimes that might make it feel like something has to go wrong, kind of thing, because it has to be perfect. So there has to be an opposite or something, I don't know, to balance it out. But it can just be a really good day. Okay, well, you guys, that's it for today's episode. You're going to have a beautiful wedding and you've already helped your OCD be manageable, which is a lot of work. So you got this. That's it for today's episode, you guys. If you want to support the podcast, as usual, you can leave a rating and a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. That would be much appreciated from yours truly. You can also like, subscribe, or comment on YouTube. I post all my videos on YouTube, so you can support the channel on there, which would also be very appreciated. appreciated. I would be super grateful if anybody shared on their story or just word of mouth, tell somebody about it. Don't be shy. They might enjoy the episode and they might enjoy the podcast. Thank you guys for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Happy 4th of July. Love you. Bye. Oh, hey, I'm taking a ride to join at late. I'm going to go to the house. I'm going to go to the house. I'm going to go to the house.